Mind Web. Short stories from the worlds of speculative fiction. This is Michael Hansen with a Mind Web story, and this time that originally appeared in Analog in 1966. It's reprinted from World's Best Science Fiction of 1967. It's Bob Shaw's Light of Other Days. Leaving the village behind, we followed the heady sweeps of the road up into a land of slow glass. I had never seen one of the farms before, and at first found them slightly eerie, an effect heightened by imagination and circumstance. The car's turbine was pulling smoothly and quietly in the damp air, so that we seemed to be carried over the convolutions of the road in a kind of supernatural silence. On our right, the mountains sifted down into an incredibly perfect valley of timeless pine, and everywhere stood the great frames of slow glass, drinking light. An occasional flash of afternoon sunlight on their wind bracing created an illusion of movement, but in fact the frames were deserted. The rows of windows had been standing on the hillside for years, staring into the valley. And men only cleaned them in the middle of the night when their human presence would not matter to the thirsty glass. They were fascinating, but Selena and I didn't mention the windows. I think we hated each other so much, we both were reluctant to sully anything new by drawing it into the nexus of our emotions. The holiday, I had begun to realize, was a stupid idea in the first place. I thought it would cure everything, but of course it didn't stop Selena being pregnant. And worse still, it didn't stop her being angry about being pregnant. Rationalizing our dismay over her condition, we had circulated the usual statements to the effect that we would have liked having children, but later on, at the proper time. Selena's pregnancy had cost us her well-paid job, and with it the new house we'd been negotiating, which was far beyond the reach of my income from poetry. But the real source of our annoyance was that we were face to face with the realization that people who say they want children later always mean they want children never. Our nerves were thrumming with the knowledge that we, who had thought ourselves so unique, had fallen into the same biological trap as every mindless rutting creature which ever existed. The road took us along the southern slopes of Ben Cruachan, until we began to catch glimpses of the gray Atlantic far ahead. I had just cut our speed to absorb the view better when I noticed the sign spiked to a gatepost that said, Slow Glass, Quality High, Prices Low, J.R. Hagen. On an impulse, I stopped the car on the verge, wincing slightly as tough grasses whipped noisily at the bodywork. Why have we stopped? Selena's neat smoke silver head turned in surprise. Look at the sign. Let's go up and see what's there. The stuff might be reasonably priced out here. Selena's voice was pitched high with scorn as she refused, but I was too taken with my idea to listen. I had an illogical conviction that doing something extravagant and crazy would set us right again. So I said, come on. The exercise might do us some good. We've been driving too long anyway. She shrugged in a way that hurt me and got out of the car. We walked up the path of her regular packed clay steps, nosed with short lengths of sapling. The path curved through trees which clothed the edge of the hill, and at its end we found a low farmhouse. Beyond the little stone building, tall frames of slow glass gazed out towards the voice-stilling side of Cruachan's ponderous descent towards the waters of Loch Linney. Most of the panes were perfectly transparent, but a few were dark, like panels of polished ebony. As we approached the house through a neat cobbled yard, a tall, middle-aged man in ash-colored tweeds arose and waved to us. He had been sitting on the low rubble wall that bounded the yard, smoking a pipe and staring towards the house. At the front window of the cottage, a young woman in a tangerine dress stood with a small boy in her arms, but she turned uninterestedly and moved out of sight as we drew near. Mr. Hagen? I guessed.
Correct. Come to see some glass, have you? Well, you've come to the right place.
Hagen spoke crisply with traces of the pure Highland accent that sounds so much like Irish to the unaccustomed ear. He had one of those calmly dismayed faces that one finds on elderly road menders and philosophers. I told him, yes, we're on holiday and we saw your sign. Selena, who usually has a natural fluency with strangers, said nothing. She was looking towards the now empty window with what I thought was a slightly puzzled expression. Up from London, are you? Well, as I said, you've come to the right place and at the right time, too. My wife and I don't see many people this early in the season. I laughed. Well, does that mean we might be able to buy a little glass without mortgaging our home? Look at that now, Hagen said, smiling helplessly. I've thrown away any advantage I might have in the transaction. Rose, that's my wife, says I never learn. Yeah, still, let's sit down and talk it over. He pointed at the rubble wall and glanced doubtfully at Selena's immaculate blue skirt. Wait till I fetch your rug from the house. Hagen limped quickly into the cottage, closing the door behind him. Perhaps it wasn't such a marvelous idea to come up here, I said to Selena. But you might at least be pleasant to the man. I think I can smell a bargain. Some hope, she said, with deliberate coarseness. Surely even you must have noticed that ancient dress his wife was wearing. He won't give much away to strangers. Was that his wife? Of course that was his wife. Very well. Anyway, Selena, try to be civil with him. I don't want to be embarrassed. Selena snorted, but she smiled whitely when Hagen reappeared, and I relaxed a little. Strange how a man can love a woman and yet at the same time pray for her to fall under a train. Hagen spread a tartan blanket on the wall, and we sat down, feeling slightly self-conscious at having been translated from our city-oriented lives into a rural tableau. On the distant slate of the lock, beyond the watchful frames of slow glass, a slow-moving steamer drew a white line towards the south. The boisterous mountain air seemed almost to invade our lungs, giving us more oxygen than we required. Hagen said, some of the glass farmers around here, they give strangers such as yourselves a sales talk about how beautiful the autumn is in this part of Argyll. Or it might be the spring or the winter. I don't do that. Any fool knows that a place which doesn't look right in summer never looks right. Now, what do you say? I nodded compliantly. I want you to take a good look out towards Mall, Mr. Garland. Hey, Mr. Garland, that's what you're buying if you buy my glass, and it never looks better than it does at this minute. The glass is in perfect phase. None of it is less than 10 years thick. And a 4-foot window will cost you £200. 200? Selena was shocked. 200, that's as much as they charge at the Sindo shop in Bond Street. Hagen smiled patiently and then looked closely at me to see if I knew enough about slow glass to appreciate what he had been saying. His price had been much higher than I had hoped, but 10 years thick. The cheap glass one found in places like the Vistaplex and Panorama stores usually consisted of a quarter of an inch of ordinary glass faced with a veneer of slow glass. It was perhaps only 10 or 12 months thick. You don't understand, darling, I said, already determined to buy it. This glass will last 10 years, and it's in phase. Doesn't that only mean it keeps time? Hagen smiled at her again, realizing he had no further necessity to bother with me. Only, you say? Pardon me, Mrs. Garland, but you don't seem to appreciate the miracle, the genuine, honest-to-goodness miracle of engineering precision needed to produce a piece of glass in phase. When I say the glass is 10 years thick, it means it takes light 10 years to pass through it. In effect, each one of those panes is 10 light-years thick, more than twice the distance to the nearest star. So, a variation in actual thickness of only a millionth of an inch would... He stopped talking for a moment and sat quietly looking towards the house. I turned my head from the view of the lock and saw the young woman standing at the window again. Hagen's eyes were filled with a kind of greedy reverence, which made me feel uncomfortable and at the same time convinced me Selena had been wrong. In my experience, husbands never looked at wives that way. At least, not their own. The girl remained in view for a few seconds, dress glowing warmly, and then moved back into the room. Suddenly, I received a distinct, though inexplicable, impression she was blind. My feeling was that Selena and I were perhaps blundering through an emotional interplay as violent as our own.
I'm sorry, continued Hagen. I thought Rose was going to call me for something. Now, where was I, Mrs. Garland? 10 light years compressed into a quarter of an inch means...
I ceased to listen, partly because I was already sold, partly because I had heard the story of Slow Glass many times before, and had never yet understood the principles involved. An acquaintance with scientific training had once tried to be helpful by telling me to visualize a pane of Slow Glass as a hologram which did not need a coherent light from a laser for the reconstitution of its visual information, and in which every photon of ordinary light passed through a spiral tunnel coiled outside the radius of capture of each atom in the glass. This gem of, to me, incomprehensibility not only told me nothing, it convinced me once again that a mind as non-technical as mine should concern itself less with causes than effects. The most important effect in the eyes of the average individual was that light took a long time to pass through a sheet of slow glass. A new piece was always jet black because, well, nothing had yet come through. But one could stand the glass beside, say, a woodland lake until the scene emerged, maybe a year later. If the glass was then removed and installed in a dismal city flat, the flat would, for that year, appear to overlook the woodland lake. During the year, it wouldn't be merely a very realistic but still picture. The water would ripple in sunlight. Silent animals would come to drink. Birds would cross the sky. Night would follow day. Season would follow season. Until, one day, a year later, the beauty held in the subatomic pipelines would be exhausted and the familiar gray cityscape would reappear. Apart from its stupendous novelty value, the commercial success of Slow Glass was founded on the fact that having a Sindo was the exact emotional equivalent of owning land. The meanest cave dweller could look out on misty parks, and who was to say they weren't his? A man who really owns tailored gardens and estates doesn't spend his time proving his ownership by crawling on his ground, feeling, smelling, tasting it. All he receives from the land are light patterns, and with Sindos, those patterns could be taken into coal mines, submarines, prison cells. On several occasions, I've tried to write short pieces about the enchanted crystal, but to me, the theme is so ineffably poetic as to be paradoxically beyond the reach of poetry, mine at any rate. Besides, the best songs and verse had already been written, and with prescient inspiration, by men who had died long before Slow Glass was discovered. I had no hope of equaling, for example, Moore with his... Oft in the stilly night here, slumber's chain has bound me, fond memory brings the light of other days around me. It took only a few years for Slow Glass to develop from a scientific curiosity to a sizable industry. And much to the astonishment of we poets, those of us who remain convinced that beauty lives though lilies die, the trappings of that industry were no different from those of any other. There were good Sindos that cost a lot of money, and there were inferior Sindos which cost rather less. The thickness measured in years was an important factor in the cost, but there was also the question of actual thickness or phase. Even with the most sophisticated engineering techniques available, thickness control was something of a hit-and-miss affair. A coarse discrepancy could mean that a pane intended to be 5 years thick might be 5.5, so that light which entered in summer emerged in winter. A fine discrepancy could mean that noon sunshine emerged at midnight. These incompatibilities had their peculiar charm. Many night workers, for example, liked having their own private time zones. But in general, it cost more to buy Sindos, which kept closely in step with real time. Selina still looked unconvinced when Hagen had finished speaking. She shook her head almost imperceptibly, and I knew he had been using the wrong approach. Quite suddenly, the pewter helmet of her hair was disturbed by a cool gust of wind, and huge, clean, tumbling drops of rain began to spang around us from an almost cloudless sky. I'll give you a check now, I said abruptly, and saw Selina's green eyes triangulate angrily on my face. You can arrange delivery?
Aye, delivery's no problem, said Hagen, getting to his feet. But wouldn't you rather take the glass with you?
Well, yeah, if you don't mind. I was shamed by his readiness to trust my script.
I'll unclip a pane for you. Wait here. It won't take long to slip it into a carrying frame.
Hagen limped down the slope toward the Syriot windows, through which some of the view towards Lenny was sunny, while others were cloudy and a few pure black. Selina drew the collar of her blouse closed at her throat.
The least he could have done was invite us inside.
There can't be so many fools passing through that he can afford to neglect them. I tried to ignore the insult and concentrated on writing the check. One of the outsized drops broke across my knuckles, splattering the pink paper. All right, let's move in under the eaves till he gets back. You worm, I thought as I felt the whole thing go completely wrong. I just had to be a fool to marry you, a prize fool. A fool's fool, and now that you've trapped part of me inside you, I'll never, ever, never, ever, never, ever get away. Feeling my stomach clench itself painfully, I ran behind Selina to the side of the cottage. Beyond the window, the neat living room with its coal fire was empty, but the child's toys were scattered on the floor. Alphabet blocks and a wheelbarrow, the exact color of freshly pared carrots. As I stared in, the boy came running from the other room and began kicking the blocks. He didn't notice me. A few moments later, the young woman entered the room and lifted him, laughing easily and wholeheartedly as she swung the boy under her arm. She came to the window, as she had done earlier. I smiled self-consciously, but neither she nor the child responded. My forehead prickled icily. Could they both be blind? I sidled away. Selina gave a little scream and I spun towards her.
The rug! It's getting soaked!
She ran across the yard in the rain, snatched the reddish square from the dappling wall and ran back towards the cottage door. Something heaved convulsively in my subconscious and shouted, Selina, don't open it! But I was too late. She had pushed open the latched wooden door and was standing hand over mouth looking into the cottage. I moved close to her and took the rug from her unresisting fingers. As I was closing the door, I let my eyes traverse the cottage's interior. The neat living room in which I had just seen the woman and child was, in reality, a sickening clutter of shabby furniture, old newspapers, cast-off clothing, smeared dishes. It was damp, stinking, utterly deserted. The only object I recognized from my view through the window was the little wheelbarrow, paintless and broken. I latched the door firmly and ordered myself to forget what I had seen. Some men who live alone are good housekeepers, others just don't know how. Selina's face was white.
I don't understand. I don't understand it.
Slow glass works both ways, I said gently. Light passes out of a house as well as in.
You mean?
I don't know. It's not our business. Now, steady up. Hagen's coming back with our glass. The churning in my stomach was beginning to subside. Hagen came into the yard carrying an oblong plastic-covered frame. I held the check out to him, but he was staring at Selina's face. He seemed to know immediately that our uncomprehending fingers had rummaged through his soul. Selina avoided his gaze. She was old and ill-looking, and her eyes stared determinedly towards the nearing horizon.
I'll take the rug from you, Mr. Garland,
Hagen finally said.
You shouldn't have troubled yourself over it. Oh, no trouble. Here's a check.
Thank you. He was still looking at Selina with a strange kind of supplication.
It's been a pleasure to do business with you.
The pleasure was mine. I picked up the heavy frame and guided Selina towards the path which led to the road. Just as we reached the head of the now slippery steps, Hagen spoke again.
Mr. Garland?
I turned unwillingly.
Mr. Garland, it wasn't my fault. A hit-and-run driver got them both down on the Oban Road 6 years ago. My boy was only 7 when it happened. I'm entitled to keep something.
I nodded wordlessly and moved down the path, holding my wife close to me, treasuring the feel of her arms locked around me. At the bend, I looked back through the rain and saw Hagen sitting with squared shoulders on the wall where we had first seen him. He was looking at the house, but I was unable to tell if there was anyone at the window. The title of our story this time is Light of Other Days, written by Bob Shaw. It first appeared in Analog in 1966 and is reprinted in World's Best Science Fiction, 1967. This is Michael Hansen speaking. Technical production for MindWebs by Leslie Hilsenhoff.